Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
And you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Welcome back to another episode brought to you by sportsshoes.com. As always, bank holiday Monday, lots of athletics been going down. Obviously watched Grand Slam track over the weekend, the Diamond League, and Bucks Athletics is going on right now as we speak. Matt's just had to switch off the stream so that we can record enjoying those 5Ks with Will Barnaco.
Yeah, it's all good, mate. I've watched the 5,000s. Good race there. It was a really good race. There was a lot of men involved till late on there, but yeah, credit to Birmingham getting a 1-2-3. And I'm not missing much anymore, just the 200s, getting ready for Bannister Miles later and those Bucks finals to come this afternoon as well. But yeah, let's get to it, mate. Grand Slam, because interestingly, people still having some divided opinions on Grand Slam. I think me and you have a slightly divided opinion on Grand Slam as well, but the criticism that it faced in race one in Kingston, people are starting to come around. There's certainly, you know, people I'm talking to, they're starting to get a little bit more engaged in the racing and the storylines. Yeah, I mean, you could just tell by the passion Kerr had when he won that 1500 that by the end of the season, and especially going into next year, I think these head-to-heads are going to be really, really intriguing, and these tactical races are going to bring out the best in people.
Well, mate, it was the passion when he won the 15, but also the passion when he realized he won that 100K in the 800 when he's counting up the placings at the end. So that was pretty cool. I think like you say, Matt, I think it people are starting to come around to it. I guess we are slightly split in that I think you love it and I think it's all right. But I definitely think it's got potential. I'm not against Grand Slam at all. And I do think some of the racing is cool. And you know me, I quite like it. I don't mind a jog fest in some of the longer races as well. So that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. And I think like some of the criticism that it's facing is just, I just think a bit irrelevant. Like, you know, a lot of people I'm speaking to is like, oh, like so many people could have won that 3000, you know, where they run 8:17, or like you could have chucked an NCAA guy in there and they probably would have got the job done, you know, and credit to Cosker, and he did get the job done. But I think they're just missing a bit of a trick. I think with the races, potentially, I mean, you mentioned this before, Lum, next year, you might just want to do one 5,000, or because, you know, a 5,000, a 3,000 is a bit similar and we're not getting the absolute best out of everyone in the 3,000 or the 5,000 because they're cautious that they've got two races in close proximity of each other. And so, you know, we're not seeing athletes really get after it. I think that's why those longer races have been tactical. That being said, on the women's side, complete opposite, that hasn't happened. But then with the 8 and 15 as well, that's becoming the 800 is becoming a bit of a procession. Like AROP is just an animal and he drags all the 8 guys with him and the 15 guys just come out the back door. And I'm not sure how many the kind of more 800s do we need to see like that. But if they raced over 2 15s, like you said, like you mentioned previously, that could be a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah, for sure, mate. And I almost think it would be like how they've got in the sprints, how they do a 1 and a 2 and a 2 and a 4. I almost think we could have an 8 and a 15 and a 15 and a 3K or a 15 and a 5K, so people can can choose like which one they do and still cross over in the 1500. Like they're doing that in the sprints. And I just think, like you say, like the toll it takes on your body means you can hit these races a bit harder.
Yeah. I think we're just in a many years ago, 8:15 was just like a very common double. Like everyone had the kind of the wheelhouse to do both. Whereas now that 15:3K is probably more relevant. And that's where a lot of the athletes lend themselves to, you know, even someone like a Koskinen. And I think that's, again, we talk about getting the big names. That is where you're going to get the likes of a Jakob enter the conversation if it is a 15-3. And then, yeah, potentially just a five. Like just a one-off five would be exciting for me. I mean, that race last night with Fisher dropping what he dropped, you know, 58, a good sort of 1,600 meters out and then runs a 3:57 mile was staggering. It was fantastic to see. And that's racing like that's, and this is what you bring out. You kind of, we don't see that all that much. We especially don't see it on a Diamond League. We see 62 after 62 after 62 on the Diamond League. And as mesmerizing it is, after a while, you just can't, you become numb to it. And I think that's where definitely I'm at with the sport. It's like these amazing performances. I think everyone's in the same. It's like, you just become numb to a sub 13, 5K now. Whereas if we used to see a sub 13, huh?
I was just going to say, mate, it's only exciting if they go and run a world record now. That's the thing, because it's just, oh, it's another quick one rather than, oh, we've got had a good race, or, oh, they've run so quick that no one's ever run that before. And that's what I think it is. It's people are running quick, but they're not running world records every single week. So actually, who cares?
Well, this is it. And if we were to see someone solo a sub 13 minute 5K in a Grand Slam, I mean, that would be mind boggling. Like that would get me probably more excited than seeing someone run a 13:45. On the wave lights with two or three people around them.
Yeah. Well, maybe look at the women's race, right? And we have a contrast to the men in that the women go around 14:20 and it's an unreal race, because you're like 14:20 in a non-pace race is outrageous. And then they're still kicking at the end. They're still kicking the two of them down the home straight, and you don't know who's going to win. So I think it just shows you, and I saw Carl Merber, he put a pretty cool stat out that the women actually had the Grand Slam record for 5K, even quicker than the men had run. So obviously only after a couple of events, but it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that went to Fisher's head, because he had to go and break it. You're right. Like what Engetic is doing is, I mean, those races were just scintillating. You know, her kicking, her battling the speed they're running. I mean, the 3,000 going off in 62 yesterday. I mean, this is just crazy. But that's what I want to see. This just pure unpredictable element to racing. I just think this is how the sport grows. A lot of the athletes are loving it. Even Mills, who had, you know, he's the first to admit he had a stinker yesterday. Even he admitted that it was the best thing that's ever happened to the sport since he's been involved in it. Yeah, pretty much a quote from him. And I do think the athletes are loving that dynamic. And I think as the years go by, or let's say next year, at the moment, I think the athletes are a little bit like, they don't really know what tactics to adopt because they're just so used to pace races. But next year, you can see athletes trying quite a few different tactics, quite a few different things. They're going to figure out people's weaknesses, people's strengths a lot better. And you're going to kind of get a lot more of these Grant Fisher style races where people are surging at specific points in the race to break people, to whittle the field down, especially when we talk about, and this is where what is quite cool about the two races is, could we potentially see some team tactics involved at some points between, you know, two friends or two training partners? Yeah, I was thinking if Kubatier and Cole Hocker are in the same race at one point, could they be helping each other out to try and, you know, maximize someone like Hocker taking the overall Grand Slam, etc. But I think the biggest thing is, what I'm trying to say is, you're going to get some great storylines. You're going to continue to get some really good matchups that we as the public can follow so much better than a couple races here and there on the circuit.
Yeah, and I think the telling sign will be over the next few years, obviously, if Grand Slam continues to grow, is, will this have an effect on the Olympic Games and the World Champs, in that will we start going back to seeing some of these, like a 350, 1500, like Centro had in 2016? Will Grand Slam, I guess, give athletes the confidence to go into these races and championship races and really jog again? Because it's something that we're seeing less and less of in the Worlds and the Olympics. And actually, the more people that do Grand Slam, will we see people actually take on slightly different approaches, and maybe everything won't be so quick? But I guess with Jakob around, there's no chance of that for now, but we will see it in the next few years.
And one of the perks, which, I mean, I am I guess, apprehensive of if Grand Slam can just hold this budget that they've got. Like, I would love to know how they plan to make money over the years. But anyway, let's just say they keep on going. One thing which is good, which not enough people are quite realizing, but I think there will be a world where Grand Slam and the Diamond League, they sit side by side. And you're going to get a number of people do Grand Slam and follow that format, but that will be their season because you can't do both. You know, you can't be racing 8 races, 4 slams, and, you know, trying to do all these Diamond Leagues, etc. Like, I'm not sure we're going to see much of Cole Hocker this year with these Grand Slams. And so, but what it does do is it takes away sort of 10, I think they're going to up the numbers to sort of 10, 12 next year in those distance races, potentially just let in a few more challenges. So it takes the numbers away there, but then also because all these big stars are competing in Grand Slam, it also opens up the door a little bit in the Diamond League. So actually, if you're an athlete, you know, on the cusp, you know, someone who's going to Worlds, going to the Olympics, but, you know, you might not be a finalist, et cetera, I think there's going to be a lot more opportunities for you over the next year or two, which in turn, there's going to be, you know, a lot more kind of financial benefit as well, whether that be in a contract or whether that be in prize money, appearance fee. So, like, and I looked at the Diamond League, how big the fields were in the Diamond League. And I know they always let in quite a lot, but they were apps, you know, 20 odd in the steeple, heaps of men in the 5. Yeah, there's 12 or 14 in the women's 8. It was crazy, like really big fields, which again is just good to see. And I think there's going to be more people competing on the Diamond League. They're going to want to make that more competitive as well. And again, up the prize money. So Grand Slam is doing, there's a bit of a ripple effect throughout the sport. And I think it's all positive.
100%. I think that's almost the best thing is the fact that Diamond League have felt like they need to respond and they need to make things better, because for us as spectators, them having a bit of a tussle to see who's the biggest kind of race on a circuit is yeah, like you say, mate, only a good thing. So, mate, we better get into a few more of these races, because I guess we've not even broken down what went on, really. And I don't know, mate, what for you, what was the most exciting one for you? Which is the one you enjoyed the most?
It was the women's races. I just think, you know, athletes were just out there and they were just attacking it. You know, what Ngetich is doing is scary. She said in an interview that when she did the Road to Records last week in Berlin, she said that was a tempo. She ran 29 minutes low. I can't remember exactly what she ran. I think it was about 29:20 or something. I might be a bit off there, but yeah, it was a women's only world record anyway. You know, for her to say she was tempoing last week, I mean, she did look bloody good running. But yeah, her sort of matchups out there on the track with Issa and Meshesha and Tati were just, yeah, brilliant. The 3K blitzed off, you know, in the 5K, they're just clipping off, you know, some really aggressive laps from the start. And it comes down to a kick finish. They were probably the most exciting. I think that Mary Mora we're seeing she's back. She's not, didn't look amazing. And like
1500.
You know, I do warrant.
1500 was good.
Yeah. It's a bit of a worry, really. I mean, as well, you know, she's beating, you know, Nikki Hills over an 800. Nikki Hills is good, but she's by no means a world-class 800 meter runner. And
no.
You know, she's only just sort of edging these sorts of women out. So yeah, but I guess kind of good to see her just sort of like attacking and winning again. It looked a little bit more like herself in the way she executed the race, that sort of fast, slow, and then being able to really stay strong and pick it up in that final 100.
Yeah, and I'll be interested to see if a Keely or a Georgia Bell bite at some point to go and be a challenger in any of these races throughout the season, because surely the money's there to offer them like big appearance fee as a challenger. Look, they've obviously not signed on for the whole season. So I think at one point we thought Georgia Bell might. I mean, it's the perfect distance for her. And you got to think she's scooping up the 100K pretty much every meet over 8 and 15. But look, she's got bigger things, I guess, on her mind in terms of going and performing in Tokyo. But yeah, I do wonder if either of them will bite and be like, okay, I want a piece of this action over that 8 and 15.
Georgia Bell will. I think we're going to see Georgia Bell in the, with the pre-classic coming up as well. I think we're going to see Georgia Bell in LA, in Philly or in LA, you know, one of those. Because I think one of them clashes with Diamond League. It might even clash with the pre-classic. I'll have to check the calendar, but one of them is very, very close to the pre-classic. And yeah, I think we're going to see, you know, if it works in Bell's calendar, she'll be there, because she's looking at this. And yeah, even Mary Moore, like 159, and you know, the 1500, Bell would back herself to be out kicking, you know, people like Nikki Hiltz. Hailey did look good. But again, you know, I think, yeah, when you talk about that 100K and winning the overall prize, I think she'd be in a great place to do that. So I think she is itching to get involved in Grand Slam. Keely, I think not so much. I mean, talking of Keely, mate, Deguma in the Diamond League looked insane. 156, runs the last eight. I think her last 100 was 14.4 or 3 or something like that. It was her quickest 100 bar the first 100 of the race. Her kick looked very good. Yeah, 156.6 in early May. Yeah, she looks like she's going to be Keely's closest rival this year.
Yeah, particularly with Keely having that injury, like she's going to be behind where she'd like to be. And don't get me wrong, like we expect her fully to come out and be ready when it matters. Yeah, when other athletes are running so well so early, you think, whew, not a good time to have had an injury.
No, it's not. But I think, you know, Tokyo being in September, she's got plenty of time. And yeah, she announced recently she's going to be the London Diamond League in July. Like, actually, I think it's probably that little injury is probably a good thing for Keely, because I think there's so much going on now. You just kind of want to be patient, stay in your lane, and just kind of be selective with those races and build through the season. Because I think a lot of people are being forced to Grand Slam's forcing people to race. And then, you know, I think a lot of people are because they're watching Grand Slam, they want to get out there, compete in the Diamond Leagues, etc. So, yeah, there's a lot going on. So she's just going to need to stay patient. But yeah, that was the women's, you know, Nikki Hiltz, another fantastic weekend from her. I mean, Jess Hull, we were saying on air, actually, she's been a little underwhelming for me. And Cole Hocker as well is another one who's been very underwhelming. And the pair of them just look like athletes who, I bet their coaches are just tearing their hair out. I bet they're just like, can we just get a good training block in? And when you've committed to the next, you know, to four slams and it's not going well, I can imagine that being a really tough position. You know, if you're Grant Fisher, look, you know, he's turning up, he's sweeping 100K. He's like, oh, this is brilliant. And he might not even be that phased about the next few slams. You know, he might just approach them and get in a really hard training block now. But when it's going bad, and you have to be turning up to these races, they're a bit of a hindrance. And yeah, they haven't looked. I mean, Hocker has, you know, they've both still kicked and made a good account of themselves in the 1500. But as good as they were last year, they're a little bit underwhelming at the moment. But it's May, so what can we expect?
Yeah, I think it depends what their mindset is going into these. If they've gone into them thinking, oh, I can do really well here, I'm going to win each slam, and they're getting like really psyched for it, then yeah, you're a bit worried for them. But actually, if, like you say, they're going into it and being like, this is early season racing, and I'm actually just kind of going out there having fun with it, I'm not really tapering for everything. Obviously, based in the US for them, so they're not doing crazy travel or anything like that. For me, it's better than Hocker, like, coming over to Europe and trying to get in races there, then traveling back and doing all sorts. So we'll see. And even just the financial incentives, right? It just, it's not all about the money, but I feel like in athletics, the more you can just like get like stock some decent cash, you can then just keep investing in yourself and not have to worry about doing anything. Like, say like Grant Fisher, right? He could win all the slams, right? Get $400,000. Obviously, his Nike bonuses will be huge after meddling last year. And then he could take, say, LA year and not race at all, and not race at all for appearance, and just really get himself ready for that come 2028. So if athletes are thinking about, I guess, their finances over the next 4 years in terms of how they get to the Olympics in the best shape, if you're just picking up cash this year and not really worrying about Tokyo too much, then I guess you're in a pretty good place.
Yeah, you are. And for me, what's exciting is, you know, someone like Fisher's learning how to race. I mean, he kind of already knows how to race, doesn't he? These Grand Slams are giving him the platform to trial lots of different tactics. So when he gets into a championship race, he's going to understand what is going to work best for him. He's also going to understand, you know, other athletes that he's coming up against. He's facing slightly different athletes at each slam. I was impressed. You know, I know Koskinen outkicked him, but to run a 12-1 last 100 meters, I was very impressed by that. You know, just that raw speed there, because no one can finish that fast in the 5,000. Jakob can't finish that fast in the 5,000. For me right now, he's the fastest closer in the 5,000 on a world level. And then, yeah, he's showing he can kind of do it from a long way out as well. And we know that he's the world record holder. But mate, you do talk, just to touch on the finances, you talk about, you know, yeah, financially, it's great for those winning, but it does quickly drop off. And when you actually put into, and we actually think a lot of these people have to run twice as well. So it's two races. I actually was like kind of doing the maths a little bit. And I'm sure someone like, you know, Cole Hocker is, you know, coming out profitable in these Grand Slams. But for example, I mean, where did he finish? I'm just double checking where he finished overall. He finished sixth, mate. Overall.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's in addition to being a racer. So because he's the Olympic champ, for him to negotiate with his agent to be a racer for the year, the amount he'd be getting paid for that will be big. We don't know those figures though, do we? Am I right in saying? They never announced those.
Well, the thing is, if he goes to any race, any Diamond League, I mean, he would be looking at £25,000 appearance fee right there, probably. Or $25,000, whatever. And that's kind of like what he's walking away with at a Grand Slam, and he's having to do two races. And I know these athletes are on these kind of retainers, aren't they? And we think they're on some sort of contract. Is it 100K for the year? I don't actually know the numbers in that sense. But, you know, if he did, and he'd just do a few Diamond Leagues, take home some nice appearance fee. He'd place high as well, would take home some good prize money. He might run fast too. And yeah, I was thinking he'll probably sit down at the end of the year and analyze it, I'm sure. But Americans, I think it's an easy decision for them because the races are on American soil as well. They haven't got to go to Europe, and they're always going to lean into racing on American soil, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think so, mate. I just think, I'm sure Hocker's getting paid a decent wedge just to be, like you say, signed on to Grand Slam for the whole season. Kerr the same, you know. And so it's that. And I also think it's their stock in the US as well. If Grand Slam is going to be the biggest thing in the US this year, outside of maybe the US trials, then the American athletes get paid high contracts because of the American audience that they bring in. And I think Grand Slam is, I guess, the next best thing to the NCAAs. Like, these athletes are almost more watched by Americans when they're in college. But now with Grand Slam, you got kind of races on American soil consistently throughout a season. Then I think that they're ensuring that they've got American eyes on them as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Talking of American eyes, mate, I do feel like the 1500 is, it's the blue ribbon event, isn't it? It's propping up Grand Slam a little bit. But when we talk about some of the fields, we have had quite a few dropouts, people moving events, dropouts here and there. And I do think the men's 3000/5000, I mean, it is weak. It was a bit like, Grant Fisher is amazing, but bit of a mismatch. You know, him versus like, yeah, you know, Sam Atkin, who supposedly hadn't run. How has Sam Atkin got in that race, by the way? He said he hasn't, he's hardly run for 6 months. I mean, which makes me think that if someone like Sam Atkin is able to get in that race when we've seen very little from him, I'm kind of thinking in my head that there couldn't have been too many people gagging to run the 3.5. I mean, even Koskinen.
I guess the issue, mate, is that if you're not going to run a fast time and you're not going to win and pick up some decent prize money over the two events, what incentive is there for a lot of athletes? Because a lot of athletes, right, they need to go and absolutely nail their race plan, nail their race schedule to go and run a qualifying time that's going to get them to Tokyo. And if that's you, why are you going to go to Grand Slam? So unless you're going to attract the best of the best, that like middle tier of athlete, but behind that, I don't see the benefit of them going other than getting a bit of publicity, really.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, you make a good point. I mean, when I watched the 3 and the 5, I was thinking, this is actually a pretty weak field. Obviously, you had the addition of Mills in there, who definitely is a very, very strong runner. It just didn't work for him for whatever reason on the weekend. But I mean, that Quemoy is just like, he's another one who just probably wants to go home and get some training in. He just seems to be way off it. So, you know, and I think, am I right in saying the only races in the 5 were Fisher and Quemoy, right? Because Gebrewet and Grijalva were both not there. So yeah, I don't know why there's no Ethiopians running in these. You know, obviously they went to the Diamond League and they all ran 12:50. I wonder if we're going to see them match up in the next couple, but I do think the next couple will be the big ones. So this time of year, April, is not, I don't think many athletes will be too excited to do a Grand Slam that time of year unless they had to. unless they're kind of like a bit of a Koskinen, you know, get an opportunity to prove themselves, which he took. So we'll see what Philly and LA bring. But
let's talk about that Diamond League 5K, because obviously, like you say, Aragawi and Gurm are both running 12:50 at the front of that one. And yeah, in a way, why do we expect anything else? I mean, Grand Slam's doing well. And like we said at the start, we think it's going to keep building. But these guys, time and time again, they just want to get in these races, get some decent money and just go around. And look, I don't think they're bored of going around and just clipping off some fast laps.
Right, they're not. And it is good. Like, it's just insane, you know, what these guys can do. They just, like I said, they've made me a bit numb to it because they make it look so bloody just routine. You know, Aragawi, Gurma's younger brother, runs 12:50. That was a 13-second PB for him. Sime runs 12:51. Kimeli Kipkorir runs another sub 13 as well. So four men break 13. It's just the German guy, Abdullahi, ran well as well. He ran 13:05. And also Brian Fahey. Obviously, we've had him on the pod before, but we support the Irish and we certainly support Brian Fahey. And he ran a pretty strong 13:12, which I think was second fastest 5K of his career. So good to see him in what was like a very aggressive race actually be able to kind of hang with it, be patient and actually come away with a good, you know, good strong time.
Yeah, it was, mate. Yeah, it was his second fastest time, and his Irish record is the only one where he's run quicker. So yeah, like you say, mate, I think doing it in a Diamond League that's more impressive than going and doing it in like a Boston, say.
On these, I mean, actually, yeah, on these Diamond Leagues and qualifying times, those first two Diamond Leagues, you know, the one in Xiamen and Shanghai, like, they're actually really good places to get a qualifying time, because you've got Africans in there who are, obviously, they're always going to run fast, but it's a season opener for many of them. Mm. So they're not going to be at full tilt. They're not running in 6 weeks, 8 weeks time. The Aragawi and Co are running 12:40. Maybe sub 12:40. And then if you're Brian Fahey, I mean, that is just, you don't want to be anywhere near that race. But, you know, there were periods where, you know, there was a bit of a breakaway and, you know, it was actually quite a good race. And hence why Brian Fahey was able to run 13:12, because he was kind of right on the limit. But yeah, that he wasn't having to go silly just to stay with people. Or he did, you know, couldn't say he obviously didn't get dropped either. So he wasn't spending a large part of the race on his own. So, yeah, I do think a lot of people should clock on to that a little bit. I mean, I say that it's very difficult to get into these races, but everyone goes to Boston in February. But if you kind of just get your season, you can open up outdoors pretty fast if you plan it accordingly and utilize those first couple Diamond Leagues.
I think they are trying, mate, to be honest. I think the Diamond League is on their radar. I think it's just impossible.
Yeah, to be fair, I think you're right there. So mate, I mean, that's, I mean, Josh Kerr was back with a bang, outkicks them all. Strong run from him and it meant a lot to him, obviously. And yeah, good to see there. I mean, anything else that we want to touch on from Grand Slam, really? I mean, I thought the sprints were good as well, by the way. I do quite enjoy watching them in this Grand Slam format for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're talking about the sprints, Sinead McLaughlin just absolutely ridiculous, as always, making the 400 and the 4 hurdles look stupid. But yeah, mate, obviously from a British perspective, I think the best thing that came out of the whole weekend was Josh Kerr, and that's across all the meets. Like, just seeing him back, seeing him pumped and seeing him confident and just loving it is the Josh Kerr we want as British fans. Because if Josh Kerr's having fun, enjoying it and getting competitive, he's going to be an absolute force throughout the summer. But mate, I just can't wait to watch him. It's him and Jakob in London Diamond League, is it, where they're facing off, and that'll be a good showing pre the Olympics. And I almost think for Kerr, I almost think Jakob needs to win that one so that he can go back and Jakob can start kind of talking shit and saying, I'm the man, he can never beat me, blah, 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 blah. And that's when we might see Kerr go again. But yeah, I guess similar to Kerr beating him in, was it Prefontaine last year?
Yeah,
it was almost, I don't know, almost like a big win too early in the season for Kerr for me.
It's going to be great to see that season unfold for sure. I think Jakob is moving very, by the way, I'm sure everyone's seen it. He's got some great content on YouTube. He's a funny guy. I've been enjoying that. I'm sure many have as well. So, mate, that's it. I mean, next week is a pretty quiet week. It's probably the last quiet week of the bloody year, to be honest. Copenhagen Marathon going down. But, you know, from a Diamond League perspective and a Grand Slam perspective and a BMC perspective. There's, you know, and like domestically, there's not heaps going on next week. It all kind of really starts to ramp up, especially towards the end of May when we know people are starting to chase those qualifying times. We're going to see a lot more people open up their outdoor campaigns as well.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess we'll be back with another episode very soon. But make sure you check out yesterday's episode with Jake Smith if you haven't already. Spoke to him kind of a few days after London Marathon and just caught up with how his life's been the last couple of years. So some great insights from him, and just open and honest was our biggest takeaway, wasn't it, mate? Just about the ups, the downs, and where he wants to go in the next few years.
It was, and I think that is just a big credit to him, because I think sometimes he says what a lot of athletes are going through, but not many athletes will actually admit most of the things that kind of Jake comes out with. And, you know, even to the point of sort of, you know, comparing people on Strava and stuff like that, you know, as a coach, that is a bit of a red flag, to be honest. It's like, you know, chill out. Why are you looking at other people? But it happens, right? And I think you'd have to be naive to think that, you know, I think a lot of people use Strava these days, and it is a part of a lot of athletes' lives. I think obviously Jake uses it a lot and, you know, talks about the challenges with using it. But yeah, I think many would kind of fail to admit the same. Not saying everyone goes through those same problems, but yeah, he is always good value, as Mark Cookway said to me, and I think that sums it up really well. Is there's just some great insight to the mental side of the sport and everything that kind of goes through an athlete's head that often many will just keep inside them.
Yeah, 100%. So go listen to that if you haven't already. And thanks for listening to us. As always, we'll catch you guys very, very soon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.